Boyle and Dave Chatfield for History of Alaska. Let's start off with Dave. Just tell us a little bit about yourself, a little bit about your family.
Well, my family came from Ireland, back in the great state of Massachusetts. They came over and settled in Fashion Island, Washington, tar paper shacks. Outdoor life stories, hunting, fishing stories. Mostly about me. From the time I was just a little kid, 6-7 years old, catching fish, you take pictures of them. So naturally, I grew up in a hunting and fishing environment. That's what I lived for. So, when I got older, things in Seattle got too much for me. Cops and radar sets and parking meters and all that kind of stuff. So I decided, well, I'll come home. So back in 56, I came up and spent the summer working for a PAF and W. McMillan Libby at a joint venture out to Allentown Cannery. And I went to work at the cannery as an assistant carpenter. Cannery, just a kid. Had a wonderful time. I'm not sure exactly. It was 1956. I've got a picture of a harbor scene. We caught and came into the harbor and dipped it out with a net and lost its mother's head. It wiggled around the boardwalks and up and down the beach and followed this river. Fed a fish around. The picture on the bottom says 1956. I went back to Seattle for a couple of years, in the wintertime. I just kept coming up here in the summer and finally I just stayed. So, that was territorial days before we had Pearson State. And we got state. Things have been declining rapidly ever since. Really, unfortunately, we have all the bad things that you get from living in a remote community with tremendously high prices and unavailability of many items, and yet you don't have any of the freedoms that you have. So you're just living in a cottage. The biggest business in town is the pork business. You're trying to pound everybody into a nice little round hole. They have what they call a police blotter in the paper. Sometimes a page, 2 pages. They've got to keep themselves busy. And boy, they do. We're so well protected that it's really tragic. They have a law against virtue. That is the big difference between the people that were here, say, pre-earthquake days, pre-1964, and the people that came after. Is that the people that were here before, their big deal, they wanted to be left alone, live their life. If they had a problem, they solved it among themselves. Nobody called the cops for anything. There was no company. There was a couple of cops. Nobody was going to mess up in their own neighborhood. A lot of these people were wanted other places, and all they wanted to do was be left alone. So, hey, there was no locks on the doors. People would come in from a fishing season and drink all winter on credit. Everybody trusted everybody, and they knew, they'd go fishing next year and come back and pay their bar for it. And that's the way some of them lived. And And the whole town, everybody knew everybody. And we had open gambling. We had open whorehouses. We had girls, you know. Dee had her girls that cruised the bars, or cruisers. And everything was wonderful. And the bars were packed, busy. There wasn't near as much money as there was. But it was moving around. It wasn't all centralized. Now the money's centralized to the point where about 200 people on the island have an absolute lock on everything. And they dictate what will or what won't be. And you can tell this by the way we go through police chiefs and city managers and city council members and whatever, because you make one of these people mad, that's it. We had Jack Rhines as a police chief for about 27 years, but he was there from the start, so he knew everybody, he knew where all the bodies were buried, so even though they hated his guts, they didn't dare say anything. And he ran the town with an iron hand. He left it open as long as everybody behaved themselves. And it worked out beautifully. We had an open town, and people were free to party and move it up. And somebody saw you driving drunk, hey, park that thing, we'll take you home, no problem. Nobody ever got tickets. There was no street lights, no, you know, none of these red flashing lights, no red and green lights, none of that tricky stuff. It was really a nice, wonderful community, as long as you didn't, you know, run away with somebody's wife or just pull an armed robbery or something. Nobody was going to bother you. There was only two basic rules. Social coupons was to ask somebody their last name or to ask where they were from. That you didn't do. And if somebody offered you that information, you probably had been a friend for a long time. And it was really a wonderful place. A man could come up, make some money, and even though things were expensive, they weren't any more expensive than they were now. Even though the roads weren't paved, the roads were as good as they are now. And we only had two cops for the whole city, chief of police and an assistant, an old 50 ship. And it went on that way for years. Then we got, after the tidal wave, we got the huge influx of repair money and all these small business loans. And they beefed up the government. They created the borough. So we have two governments, a government within a government. We have the city of Kodiak and we have the Kodiak Island borough government. And boy, it's never stopped since. They have the greatest system for generating cash for themselves. We've got lots of $60,000 a year secretaries. I get a kick. They have a little known rule up there that everybody who works for the borough gets $100 a year on top of their pension for every year they work for the borough. In other words, if you work 20 years, and you would get a third, I believe, of your base pay, or two-thirds of your base pay is retirement, and then you would get another $2,000 on top of that. So, it's very nice, but it's bankrupt people. They've had their boom years, they had their king crab years, and they went out and slaughtered the king crab, and now there's no king crab left. And they did the same thing with the shrimp. They didn't control it. There was too much pressure by the fishing industry. And so they let them go, and they slaughtered the shrimp and wasted them. Tremendous amount. Now there's no shrimp, and now they're doing the same thing with the other fisheries. Their plan is that they have gone to limited entry, which is a real tragedy, because if the father in a family, say a native family, he goes and gets drunk and sells his permit, what's the kid going to do? He can't come up with $100,000, so his birthright is gone. And that has happened a lot of time. I know a taxi driver over here had to drove some people around, lived in town all winter. Some people from Old Harbor got their drink driving around the taxi line. $1,200 in the taxi. A lot of shenanigans have gone on with this limited entry, and it really hasn't made any difference. All you've done is create another artificial layer of money. These permits were given for free, and now they're worth hundreds of thousands of dollars. And so you created a few rich fishermen. And you blanked everybody else out of the market. You just took the competition. So limited entrance is a real sad situation. But they've done that. They've done that with just about everything here. Made a situation where they made so many rules in your zoning ordinances, in your general laws around that you can't even build a smokehouse. They got a permit. You have to have a permit and pay them cash to do anything. And consequently, they've got it. So people come here. They get a job with the state or the borough or the city. They put in their time. The day they retire, they're having a garage sale. They take all that money and they can live like a king outside in Astoria or Podunk or wherever. And the chief of police, I think, over on the Olympia Peninsula, I can't remember. Squim. It's supposed to be number 7. Maybe the spots in the pool or something. A big green free area. And many of the other people. I talked to one guy, he had a tremendous amount of years out here. He got something $6,000 or $7,000 a month in retirement. I mean, these people, The Herman Bukers, when he left, was making more money per year than the government, than the governor of the state. He was head of public works because of longevity. And so they're all carrying that money out of town.
How about since statehood, have you seen anything good happen in the state of anything good in the Kodiak or Alaska?
No. It's brought many good things, don't get me wrong. We have better access. We have paved roads and such. We have a big hospital. We have a lot of things, but it's brought a whole lot more bad than it has. It's changed the character of the people. It's destroyed their ability to do for themselves. Taking all these people that were true Alaskans that helped each other and helped themselves and solved their own problems. Now, if they have a problem, they call a cop and they call a lawyer. We had two lawyers in this town for many, many years or so. One of them became a judge, Judge Madsen. The other one was George Holt. He's been here since about 52. Came down from Fairbanks. Now there must be 40 lawyers. Everybody wants to be a lawyer or a cop. Biggest business on the island. And people are solving their problems. People brought Seattle and Los Angeles and Sacramento and all those places. They brought it right up here and made all those laws and just brought it with them. So now you have a little tiny place where things are very expensive. You have all the inconveniences of living in a very remote area, and yet you have all the laws and regulations. You might as well be living in downtown LA. There's just literally a cop on every corner. I got a kick out of it last night. I pulled out and there was nobody around, and I ran the stop sign there by the Elks Club. And I could see there wasn't anybody. Halfway down the block, there was a cop car double parked. Hit me, but just it's a miracle. And they're thick. You just have all this tremendous protection, and they pull you over for nothing at all. Smell your breath to see if you have any. We have a waiting line, a waiting list of people waiting to go into jail at a certain time. Drunk driving, trespass, fighting in bars, all these little kind of foolish things that nobody ever paid any attention to. Nothing was ever said. All these people have records now that all done. It's just a real tragedy. They've all been pushed through the legal system. And if you were still out here at the end of the world, then there's really no need for a legal system. I see the cops bought another one of these. We've got, what, 40 miles of usable road on the entire island. They bought one of these little Ford Chase cars. The thing will go 160 miles an hour in 6 seconds or something like that. But hell, in the best of circumstances, you're pressed to do 60. There are only a couple places you wouldn't be taking your life in your hands to do 60.
And that's not for very far.
Here we've got this super little Zoom car to chase people. It's ridiculous. They can't go anywhere because nobody can swim. But they chased some guy out the road here the other day. Wound up shooting his tires. Where's the guy going to go? There's one road he's driving out of. But they've got to have their fun.
But,
that was 1967 when they had the big flood. The dike broke up the town. The whole town was under. I rode over the Schmucklers, maybe 40 feet of water, all over town, clear up the second floor of some buildings. And I had just won a print shop at the World's Fair, the A67 site, the Alaska World's Fair site, which held in Fairfax. I won a print shop and a poker game from Ed Johnson. And I had the press and the print, and I was printing up newspapers with the phony headlines. Joe Doak's caught in vice raid, and then it was ring pressed with the newspaper. And I came down that morning, and the whole building was gone. It was just wood stumps in the ground. The whole building went right down the Chena River into the Tanana, which flowed into the Yukon. Everything was gone, along with my boat and my car and just everything else. So after that, I tried to patch one of my remaining cars up. I train changed the fluid, and I made it as far as Delta Junction. Sold to a kid in a gas station. Big Buick Roadmaster sold to a tank. Had all my stuff stacked out there. It's all soaking wet. Hitchhiked a ride with a truck in Anchorage. Put it on an Alaska steamship. Went to Seattle. Got a job with Boeing. Get my bankroll. Worked as an engineer for a couple of years. When I came back, I've been here in Kodiak ever since. I came back to Kodiak about 69.
From the time you were here in Kodiak before, until like back in 69, like the result of the earthquake, you see a lot of difference in money and business.
Oh, yeah, there was a tremendous amount of money these people got. 2.5%, 3% loans, disaster loans, and they opened up all these bars, and there was a tremendous amount of construction and reconstruction and breakwater building, all this kind of stuff. So everybody had big jobs, and they came from all over, and this place was really a boom town. Unfortunately, while everybody was busy working and partying and having fun, they had city councils and just kept making ordinances. We went from a town that all the laws for the entire town would be contained in the booklet, a little pamphlet, which was about 2 pages both sides. And that contained everything. Now it's volumes, huge volumes of ordinances, any one of which you can find in the rest of it. Done, God knows what else to do. Then that wasn't good enough for them. They created the Kodiak Island Borough. And they created a whole other layer of government. And when they're not fighting each other, they're both making ordinances that govern what happens to them. And if they get something that's a particularly hot issue, they wait until all the fishermen go out. We laughingly call it the summertime ordinances. They wait until like a halibut opening or something like that, where all the fishermen are out of town trying to make a living. Then they'll have a city council meeting and they'll pass an ordinance. Time you come back, they got another law. And they've really hammered. It's really sad. That and the fact that they made by their land policies and tying up all the land and not letting them use, and the fact that the city wants to be in the real estate, because the city's bought more real estate than anybody else here in town. They seized real estate for delinquent taxes, purchased pieces of real estate around, they bought Gibson Gold with taxpayers' money. Their credit's tremendous. They can get just about anything they want. They bought that big piece of land out there where the phone company was. Sold part of it to the phone company and used the rest of it for a vacant lot and a parking lot. City equipment. They've got just a multitude of deals where they're the big landowners. They take all this money, they take all this land off the tax rolls, put it into the public coffers, which is not what they want for you. Nothing to do with that. As I said, we've gotten down to the point now where all the chips are centralized between the houses. Of all the people on the island, there's about 200 people who can actually say something and get listened to. The rest of us are just living here, hoping we can get listened to.
What changes do you see about fisheries going on, like say, like shrimp and crab?
And now all the rest of the fisheries that aren't limited entry fisheries. Dutch Harbor has become like Kodiak was in the 50s. And everybody's just literally moving out to Dutch Harbor. Canneries can't afford to be here. They've got a raw fish tax, they've got a 5% sales tax on everything. They've got a personal property tax. They've got a real property tax. We have more taxes around here. You'd think you were living in New York. And all these taxes are geared to sustain a government that nobody even wants. They can't even maintain the roads. It's a real sad situation. Government was designed supposedly to do the things for themselves. It wasn't designed to just make an awful lot of people, provide them with real great jobs, tremendous retirement packages, and to tell everybody else how to live. But that's what we've got. So that's my story.
Wait, take a last one, please.
I think it's getting more all the time. They're going to beat the natives out of their land. There's no doubt in my mind about that. And they'll do that by putting them in a tax picture where they have to start paying taxes. At that point, they either have to develop it or they'll lose it. Well, they're not going to let them develop it, as the people down here in the south end of the island are finding out. They have all these conservationists and Greenpeace and everybody else in the world saying, oh no, you can't build anything there, that's bear refuge, that's this and that's that. And they're desperately trying to sell something or do something with the land to create some revenue. But they're going to wind up taking the majority of it back, making land swaps and doing all this other tricky things. And most of the people who are here now would just as soon see the place turned into wilderness. Tremendous bunch of people saying, now that I'm here and I've got money, we just turn it all into one big park and don't let the people come once in a while and take pictures. Unfortunately, we now have a political outfit in the White House, coming to the White House, that feels the same way. But it's going to make some real problems for people who want to come up here and open the country up. I think they're going to wind up. They'll be very lucky if they don't go Panama or just change it into a wilderness. If they do that, I don't think they're good. And they can do that with extend all these other parks. giant part. People who, like they do now, live around the edges. We're living here on the edge of a refuge. 85% of this island is refuge. Maybe more. Just got this complaint. Two native villages. Natives can't do anything with the land. They don't have the capital or the knowledge to develop it. So, well, that's the way it's always been. Unfortunately, people can't come up here and make high wages because they're finding out rapidly that the wages haven't changed here in 20 years. Now, back when New England Fish Company was running, before they went bankrupt, they owned Gibson Gold and Palaka. Now, they were paying $6.25 an hour for a cannery person to work. And today they're paying the processing outfit that's down there in the same hole working where they were. I forget the name of the processors. They're paying $6.80. And so this other outfit was what, almost 20 years ago. So the wages haven't changed at all. And when you come up, they made all these laws. You see, the people used to be, if they finally created a campground to alleviate some of the situations. But basically, if you have to pay rent, when rent is $800 a month for a single apartment, one bedroom apartment, even with the utilities furnished, by the time you buy food and do whatever you're going to do, and God forbid you should go down to the bar and have a $3.50 or $4 bottle of one bottle of beer, if you feel like relaxing, you're broke. You cannot come up here. The only way you can come up here, even the college kids have found out, is the only way you can come up here is you have to get a job where they pay your room and board. It's included. You have to work in a cannery that's outside, out somewhere, like Uganic or Arson Bay or Carlock or wherever. If you can, Alitac down there in the south end, all those canneries that hire people have bunkhouses. If you live in the bunkhouse, there's no bars, there's no nothing. So you can save you, there's no need for money. You work for your 3 months, and at the end of the summer, you've got a paycheck. You've got $2,000 or $3,000. But basically, people find out, hell, I can stay, I can work at a McDonald's and live in Portland and not have that running around in the aggravation and make the same kind of money. It's just that there's a lot more to spend on. Only saving thing up here is that with those kind of jobs, there's no place to go, no place to spend your money. And they're paying your room and board, so you're taken care of. But for somebody to come into the town of Kodiak, and even if they're living down in the campground for $3 a day, they've got to come to town to buy food. By the time they do all that stuff, they're lucky to save enough money to get out of town. $4 a gallon for milk, and that's sort of special. It's just, yeah, you go get a little tiny pizza for about $19. It's just ridiculous. A case of beer is $50 at the liquor store. So it's, you know, you buy a fishing license, it's $20 for sport fishing. You'll buy enough tackle and a fishing pole and a reel to set you up, that's a couple $100. So, and then when you go out to the creek, you're going to see more game wardens than you do fish. It's very, very, very controlled environment. Oh, yeah, the cost of all the taxes that they have. Situation where virtually nobody can afford to live here. The man and the wife both work, and then they save what they can. The minute they get to where their retirement, they quit and they're gone. They move out. That's virtually what everybody does. They move someplace out down south where they can to Oregon or Idaho or one of these places where there's no taxes. Living is cheap, and you still have the hunting and fishing, you can still go shooting here, but it doesn't cost you.